It's time once again for Dialogue Conspiracy with political research specialist Mae Brussel, who for 5 years has shared with us her extensive research into political assassinations and abuses of power in this country. Her program relates the news of the week to emerging evidence about the conspiracy which allegedly maintains by force its control over the legislative, executive, and judicial processes in America. And now, Mae Brussel.
Good afternoon. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. Dialogue Conspiracy number 264, April the 11th, 1977. Last week's Dialogue Conspiracy was taped several days in advance. I'm sorry for that. I was down in Los Angeles for the week and had to tape the show before I left. And I taped it just the same day that George Nemorenschild was murdered in Florida. The material on George Nemorenschild was timely. It will always be timely. I'd like to do 6 or 8 shows just on that gentleman alone. And the information you got is good information, but I couldn't redo the tape and I couldn't come back. And I knew he would be murdered like Jimmy Hoffa. His body would not be found. He had been missing 3 weeks at the time that I taped the show. And then he died that evening. And within the same week that he died, there were 2 other murders. And I'm going to talk about those today on Dialogue Conspiracy. One was the former president of Cuba, Carlos Prio Siqueiros. And then there was the murder of another gentleman that worked for the CIA in Chicago, who also worked with the same team. Got very little publicity, named Charles Nicoletti, 60 years old, and he died in Melrose Park in Chicago, Illinois. 3 men from the CIA died within just several days of each other. And Nemorenschild got quite a bit of publicity at first, and then the publicity began to make it look as if he were a crazy man and took his own life. And for the bulk of the show, we're going into the meaning of these 3 deaths within that short time period. I did want to tell you, Midnight is on the stands now, Midnight Magazine, the issue April the 12th. For local people, by the time this goes east and north and west, rather south, the show will not be on time for you to get off the newsstand. The first article I did for Midnight, the last recent one of a series, but there's one out right now that will be on the stand another day or two, and that's on Oswald and his job at the motorcade route and how he knew in advance where the route was going to come. That did involve George Nemorenschild. He's mentioned several times in the article, and I wanted Midnight to play up the fact of George Nemorenschild in the article because I knew it would make headline material when Nemorenschild was found dead. They chose not to do it that way, and they were sorry. So the next morning, they called me Wednesday morning last week, and I did a full-length story on George Nemorenschild for Midnight Magazine. And that's on the stand starting this week and this next week, and you can get that and write to them for the April 12th issue. And then, of course, after Carlo Prio Siqueiros died, I sent them a 3rd article, and then we have a 4th rolling. They do a good job. Malcolm Abrams does a good job of taking the material I have. It's good information, and it's new information to the American public, and not many magazines are giving good articles or good information out. It isn't as much as I would like. I'd like several pages to fill in the details, but it's good. So I get letters all the time from people. Do you have any new articles? What do you have out now that you've published? So you can get these articles last week's, or the April 12th issue, and then next week and the week after. In the news media, there's so much suppression of the facts of the conspiracy and evidence of conspiracy all these years. That's been the major problem in the United States for people who've done hard research, like myself and many others, is getting it into the major media. The major media only covers a story when they're forced to, such as at the time of Watergate, when they were forced to continue the story when James McCord told Judge Sirica that the Justice Department was dragging its feet and there was perjury and so forth. Then they really started to tell a little more about who was behind Watergate, but until then they preferred to let several people, 5 or 7, plead guilty and close the case and hush up a lot of hanky-panky that eventually caused the President of the United States to resign. But there's one gentleman that you have to watch in the news media because he puts the lid on information and he lets out information, and he's just like a faucet that you can turn on or off. That's Jack Anderson. He knows a lot. I know he knows a lot, but he doesn't let it out. And when he lets it out, then it's a time bomb. And you can tell the way the stories are going to break later by Jack Anderson's putting them in at a certain time. When he writes an article that he believes Howard Hughes is dead, then within a month or two, the body was cashed in Houston, Texas. The body was delivered and buried. Wasn't Howard Hughes, but you know that that hoax is about to terminate. Jack Anderson had an article this last week on Martin Luther King murder, and he brings out a lot of what he calls new material. And there isn't a thing in there that is new to any of the researchers. We've talked about it many, many times on KLRB about James Earl Ray talking to a cellmate and hearing that there was money to kill Martin Luther King and the aliases. And he gets a syndicated column using the names of Eric Galt. He says James Earl Ray had and Raymond Snead and Paul Bridgman and John Willett. And, of course, we've had these on KLRB since 1968, almost from the moment that Martin Luther King was killed. But there was a piece of information he had in this article, which is like a time bomb. He said the committee received unverified reports that Ray was in touch with the Beverly Hills office of Litton Industries in California while he was posing as Eric Galt. He also listed his previous employer, a Pascagoula, Mississippi shipbuilding company, which is owned by Litton Industry. The investigators are checking whether there's any relationship between James Earl Ray and Litton Industry. Now, this was a long, long column of material that is rehashed, but this is terribly important because it was Litton Industry that was the siphoning of money in 1967 for the Central Intelligence Agency. It was a front for the Central Intelligence Agency, and still is, that overthrew the Greek government at the time that Andreas Papandreou was up for election in Greece and brought in the military dictatorship. The funding came through Litton Industry and Roy Ash. And at the time of Watergate, when Martha Mitchell was injected and kidnapped, I wrote at length in my very first published article about Litton Industry being a cover for the military junta and how the purpose of Martin Luther King's murder in April of 1968 was to escalate an unknown man named Spiro Agnew. He was the governor of Maryland, but he was literally unknown. Then he called in moderate blacks and accused them of being behind black riots, which I believe were caused by provocateurs at the time. And Spiro Agnew became like Adolf Hitler with the Reichstag fire. He became the spokesman for the anti-black movement and law and order that gave the muscle to Richard Nixon, as if he needed any muscle. But the important thing was that Agnew had very strong connections to the Greek military junta that had been put in a year earlier in 67, and to Tom Pappas in Greece, who was funding Spiro Agnew and who was getting money from the CIA. And there's been some more new links on Tom Pappas' involvement in the elections in 68. And I claim that Litton Industry had a part in the Martin Luther King assassination through Spiro Agnew and Tom Pappas. And now, for the first time, Jack Anderson is bringing out the fact of James Earl Ray's connections to Litton Industry. It was a shame that Roy Ash was office management, budget, and controlled our funds, and at the same time owns Litton Industry that was used to siphon off money for military dictatorships. Another article with that Jack Anderson had this week was on Oswald evidence, and he begins to give a little more information about the John Kennedy assassination. Of course, a man of the stature of Jack Anderson come out and say, I really am sorry. These various researchers like Mae Brussel or even Jim Garrison named the no-name key group an anti-Castro unit at his trial in 1967 when he arrested Clay Shaw. Jack Anderson comes out in 1977 with a story that Oswald is linked to members of the paramilitary anti-Castro unit known as the no-name key group. This has been known to researchers, and we've lectured about this at lecture circuits and talked about the Cuban exiles that worked with Lee Harvey Oswald. And Jack Anderson said there's new information that is coming out that the House Assassination Committee Subcommittee has uncovered. And he makes it sound like it's a whole new game, that the CIA and FBI, he said, withheld evidence from the Warren Commission. Now, I want to make one point very clear on Dialogue Conspiracy about the old news, the new news, the news media suppression of news. All of this, just about all this material coming out, was known to the researchers for a long, long time. The real shock behind the investigation of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King isn't that the FBI and the CIA withheld anything or very much from the Warren Commission. The Warren Commission members were corrupt from the day they started. Gerald Ford, Earl Warren, John J. McCloy, Alan Dulles, Hale Boggs, Richard Russell, and Mr. Cooper. They were all, Representative Cooper, they were all, Senator Cooper, they were corrupt. They perverted the evidence. They looked the other way. An example is that not one of the members of the Warren Commission attended any of the testimony of George de Mornchil, the man who was murdered last week. And the Warren Commission was corrupt. It was not the fault of the FBI or the CIA that withheld information that is new. There may be documents now that they didn't have then, but they had enough to fire every top-level FBI man and top-level CIA person at the time. John Kennedy fired Alan Dulles and top officials of the CIA after the Bay of Pigs fiasco, and these top officials should have been fired after the John Kennedy assassination. I've read before on Dialogue Conspiracy the memos of the meetings that Gerald Ford attended, and he wrote about in his book how they met at a secret meeting on January 24, 1964, the chairman of the commission on a Friday night, and they received information that Lee Harvey Oswald was working for the FBI. And Jack Anderson says now this seems to be credible. This first meeting, rather, was Wednesday, January 22, 1964, when the chief counsel got information that Oswald was working for the FBI and got $200 a month, and he had an account number that they called number 179. And there's a lot of talk, the subcommittee in Washington, newspaper people writing now that they knew that Oswald worked for the FBI, but they didn't know he worked for the CIA. That is a lie, that they are lying to you. They knew it all along. I have here a document taken from the National Archives from Mr. J. Lee Rankin, the general counsel for their files. And this is what he wrote about Lee Harvey Oswald. Mr. Rankin, he said, on Friday, January the 24th, 1964, the chairman of the commission, that's Earl Warren, and I met with Attorney General Carr from Texas, District Attorney Wade, that's from Dallas, Texas, Assistant District Attorney Alexander, and Mr. Leon Jaworski and Dean Story. Leon Jaworski was the chief prosecutor in the Watergate case. And we discussed the allegations that Oswald was an undercover agent. They stated also that Mr. Melvin Belli, the attorney for Jack Ruby, was familiar with these allegations, and Henry Wade stated that he was aware of the allegation to the effect that Oswald was an informant for the Central Intelligence Agency, and with that job he carried number 110669. So when you read articles by people like Jack Anderson and they tell you that the Warren Commission didn't know that Lee Harvey Oswald worked for the CIA, that is a lie, because in January 1964, at their second meeting, they had that information available to them. Well, Mr. de Mornchil was murdered. He was the most important witness for many, many reasons that some I went into last week and some I'll go into again next week. And, of course, the cover-up began. They began to say he was crazy. Time magazine had the most amazing article on George de Mornchil. They said he had been hospitalized as a psychiatric patient for 2 months, the end of the last year. He believed the people were following him. He had bizarre hallucinations and distortions that people were following him. This is the man that arranged all the fabrications that he could about Lee Harvey Oswald and was writing a book on the Kennedy assassination and had told people in 1965, 66, 67 that he knew something about Oswald. He was ready to talk. He was writing a book. And the years went on, and he was putting it down and writing a book called I'm a Patsy, which we'll probably never see. It'll probably be D6, like Deep Six, like Martha Mitchell's book. But de Mornchil was put in a mental hospital, and I'm sure that it was at that point that he was programmed to being hypnotized and then to shoot himself. And his lifespan was over. He was teaching at a university in Texas, and he took a powder. He just walked away and disappeared. And the last he was seen, he was sequestered in a home in Florida and then allegedly pulled a shotgun out of a drawer and shot himself. Well, right after George de Mornchil died, his death was first week in April 1977, Right after that, April the 6th, another important gentleman died in Florida, Carlos Prio Siqueiros. The New York Times always gives good obituaries to some of these people, and of course they were as skimpy as our own Monterey Herald out here. I'm going to read you about Siqueiros, and I'm going to read you about the other Chicago member of the CIA that worked with this team. According to the obituaries and the newspaper articles, they tell you he was the president of Cuba from 1948 to 52, that he died apparently of a self-inflicted bullet wound. He's 74 years old. He was found at 8:15 in the morning, bleeding in the garage of his own home. A policeman was there. There was only one bullet fired from a .38 caliber pistol, and he was still conscious, according to the policeman, and he said he fired the gun himself. And, of course, this can be interpreted many ways, and I'll give you some reasons why I don't believe this story is true either. They said there was no immediate explanation of why he died. He left no notes, and he had no problems. He was pretty financially secure. The stories are that he left Cuba as when he was president. He skipped out with some accounts, $30 million, other accounts, $50 million. The New York Times said he left with $30 million misappropriated funds, and he had hardly spent that, so he wasn't wanting for any money. He was a very important person politically, but to read the story, it just tells you that he had supported Castro and then turned against Castro and had met recently with Secretary of State Cyrus Vance, which was true. And they said he was characterized for his respect for civil liberties, and that's Carlo Prio Siqueiros. If you read that, you wouldn't know that he was friendly with George de Morenschild or knew about him or worked with the same teams, even though they died a day apart and in the same state. And then, of course, the next day, or the same day that de Morenschild died, there's an article about a gangland enforcer. And I got this from one newspaper. I didn't see any other articles on this particular case at all. And I take 10 papers a day, and it's been a week. This is from Chicago. And here's the key. It doesn't say Associated Press, United Press. It just says Chicago. A gangland enforcer described by sources as a key man in the Central Intelligence Agency crime syndicate plot to kill Cuban President Fidel Castro died Wednesday, the victim of a mob assassination. The Siqueiros story and the de Morenschild were solved within an instant, and this case was solved within 1 second. It was a mob assassination. Charles Nicoletti, 60, once a Chicago hitman, was pulled from his burning car in a parking lot of a suburban restaurant Tuesday night. He was shot 3 times. He was once the right-hand man to slain mob boss Sam Giancana, and he took the top spot in the Chicago mob after that. It goes on to say that Mr. Nicoletti began to draw away from the mob after Giancana was killed, which makes good sense. And he said he pulled away after Giancana's death because, and now this is the good one, because he felt that the CIA was taking over the operation, which is exactly true. The CIA has been taking over the total mob operation since the Howard Hughes organization went into Vegas in 66 and in the war in Vietnam. The importation, the government of drugs and the mob market, including the mob and then killing them, is exactly what's taking place. And this says that Mr. Nicoletti objected to the CIA taking over the syndicate. The CIA syndicate deal reportedly called, this is what Mr. Nicoletti did for the CIA, in case you wondered, in addition to planning to kill Fidel Castro, he cooperated in smuggling prostitutes from Marseille, France, into the United States to staff the mob-operated brothels and hotels in Las Vegas, Nevada, and elsewhere. This is an important man because prostitution is a way to control politicians, arms contracts. That's the way Howard Hughes got his first military contracts through Johnny Meyer. He procured prostitutes for the top military brass and public officials and law enforcement in the total United States and in the Pentagon, and then could blackmail them through the prostitution and satisfy their needs and get the contracts. And this is what the CIA did with this particular gentleman, Charles Nicoletti. They brought women from France for prostitution, which I'm sure gave the CIA power and muscle through blackmail and prostitution, and it said that he turned against the mob when the CIA began to take over the mob. Well, I did a story for Midnight, as I say, on these murders, and I want to share some of it with you now, and then you can read some of it later. Part of it is incorporated in there. The question I say is, murder incorporated? Yes, I believe that is what is happening. I believe that agents of the United States government, assisted by the major media, are silencing these witnesses to the assassination and conspiracy. The media immediately said DeMorenchil killed himself, Sakharov killed himself, the mob hit Nicoletti, with absolutely no seconds proof or investigation at all on who was on the scene or how it happened. I've researched these deaths for a long time, and now they're escalating quickly. When people like DeMorenchil and Sakharov and Nicoletti die within 2 days of each other, and all of them worked with the Central Intelligence Agency, and the committee in Washington is just moving ahead, the House Committee on Assassinations, something is wrong when three people of this importance die within this short time period. DeMorenchil was the associate of Lee Harvey Oswald, who was found shot in the mouth, as I say, with this 20-gauge shotgun. Sakharov was a close associate in nightclubs and business with Jack Ruby, and then he shot himself, and Nicoletti was a key man in the plans to kill Fidel Castro, and these other gentlemen were involved in that Bay of Pigs operation. The number of murders of people employed by the CIA involving the plans to kill Fidel Castro or to kill John Kennedy or involved in the Bay of Pigs operation goes beyond any reasonable explanation, except that they were silenced on purpose. And besides that, the suicides can be hypnotized, like Candy Jones said in her book, The Control of Candy Jones, where she was told to kill herself, and her husband saved her instead of her committing suicide after she worked for them. Any of you that go into a Jewish ceremony at the end of the year, after following the Jewish New Year, we have Yom Kippur, and that's a very holy ceremony where you list off the names of the people that died in the last year. And I put together a list of people that have worked with the CIA, that have worked in the Kennedy assassination, that I believe are murdered and are murdered after they appeared, some of them before they testified at Senator Church's committee. Sam Giancana was murdered before he testified. DeMorenchil was dead last week in Florida before, just when the House had sent somebody down, the House representatives, to interview him, to have him appear. He was going to Washington to appear. And, of course, Nicoletti would appear because he was involved in the plot to kill Castro or the Bay of Pigs group. I'm going to read you these names. Someday I'll do a show just on these people, but I want to read you some of the people that have been murdered in conjunction with this investigation because of the death of these three men just a few days apart. They won't mean much to you except that they each one have a case history that is important and long. Of course, there was Lee Harvey Oswald, killed 2 days after John Kennedy was killed, and then George DeMorenchil now, who was his friend and created the lies about Oswald that had no basis in fact. There was Clay Shaw, who died just about the same week it came out that he was, in fact, in the CIA and then was in Mexico the same time E. Howard Hunt was in Mexico in the CIA. David Ferry died the same time that Clay Shaw was arrested, when Jim Garrison was going to arrest him for having a part in the conspiracy to kill John Kennedy. John Rosselli murdered, his leg sawed off, found in a drum after he testified before a congressional committee. Sam Giancana shot not just a short distance away from where Mr. Nicoletti lives in Chicago, in a kitchen. He was shot and killed. Robert Hall was murdered through his kitchen window a summer evening, involved in this case in Los Angeles. Jack Ruby died of a mysterious cancer like Martha Mitchell. The Sheffield Edwards of the CIA, who planned the assassination team to kill Castro. There's William Harvey of the CIA, who provided the weapons for killing Fidel Castro for these people. There's Guy Bannister, who's dead, who worked with Robert Mayhew in Chicago before he opened an office and shared space with Lee Harvey Oswald in New York, in New Orleans. There's Rose Chermy, Hugh Ward, Perry Raymond Russo, that worked with I won't give the details of all of these, but some of these are important. Russo worked with Clay Shaw and David Ferry, Charles Cabell, Maurice Gatlin, Roland Masfer, Jack Beers, E. Del Valle, who was killed immediately after the links came out of him with David Ferry, Hiram Ingram, Nicholas Chetta, Mayor Chip Morrison of New Orleans, Mary Bledsoe, Warren Reynolds, Darren Way Garner, Eugene Locke, Merriman Smith, George McCain, Charles Batchelor, Jack Zangetti, Eddie Raymond Walter, Roger Craig, Ronald McQueen, Hank Kellum, Dorothy Kilgallen, Arlene Roberts, William Whaley. This Ronald Curtis McLean is a gentleman that lived at Beckley Street, just outside. It's a part of Texas. They were Lee Harvey Oswald had a room, the rooming house on Beckley Street. And I got a letter from a man. He's 86 years old, and he's blind, and he's up at Vacaville, California, who says he can pinpoint the abandoned mine shaft where this Ronald Curtis McLean's body is. This witness is Joseph Cecil McKinney, and he claims he's locked up as a prisoner inside Vacaville, and he knows about the assassination to kill John Kennedy. And this witness stayed at the rooming house with Lee Harvey Oswald and was put in an abandoned mine shaft. That's just one example of a witness who's still alive and can't get to us. Hank Kellum, Dorothy Kilgallen, Arlene Roberts, William Whaley, Karen Bennett Carlin, Tom Howard, Bill Hunter, Jim Cote, Betty McDonald, Harold Russell, Mrs. Earl Smith, Captain Frank Martin, Marilyn Magar, Rose Jeremy, Edward Benavides, Karen Cupsinay, Robert Perrin, Gary Underhill, Lee Bowers, James Worrell, Albert Guy Bogart, Bertha Cheek, Herman Brown, Jake Eugene Ramsey, Orville Nix, Hobart Higgins, Robert Robertson, Dorothy Hunt, the bag woman. Her husband arranged the entire Bay of Pigs operation. James Channey, Reverend Clyde Johnson, Manuel Rodriguez, Ed Kendricks, Robert Navarro, Mary Pinchot Meyer, Jimmy Hoffa, Hale Boggs, J. Edgar Hoover, John R. Stiles, Bill Chesser, Austin Cook. All of those people knew about the Kennedy assassination and had queer, strange, and untimely deaths. There are other people to include Paul Rygotorotsky, who worked with the CIA Tolstoy Foundation, died the same week that George de Morenchild took a powder and mysteriously walked out of a college where he was teaching, didn't finish the semester. It was that Tolstoy Foundation that brought Marina Oswald to this country through the conduit of the Greek Orthodox Church. Eugene Zwart was another witness. There are two people who were shot through the mouth suicides, like George de Morenchild. One was a gentleman, Secretary of the Air Force, who arranged John Kennedy's trip to San Antonio. He knew of a plot to kill Kennedy. They said it was a suicide. He shot himself in the mouth. And Daniel Burrow died in 1967, shot through the mouth. He worked for the CIA. He also helped infiltrate the anti-Semitic right wing in the Dallas, Texas area. He knew about the murder of Mr. Rockwell, the Nazi party, and he was supposed to have shot himself through a gunshot through the mouth. Now, with that many witnesses dead, I accuse the mass media of covering up right away, saying in these cases that they are suicides or mob hits. They come out all the time. There's a story this week, John Roselli was killed by the mob. It just came out, the Salt Lake Tribune, UPI story. Yesterday, John Roselli, a mobster, was hit by the mob. How do they know? Because a witness provided the information, but the witness is dead. They wait till a person is dead, and then they quote them. They can say, de Morenchild said that Oswald did such and such because de Morenchild's dead. And they say, we know the mob hit Roselli and not the CIA because a witness said so, but the witness is dead. After the assassinations of John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, a whole list of murders, we're always told the shooting of George Wallace, you know, a lone assassin, and absolutely no conspiracy, no evidence of a conspiracy. The news media has lied consistently. So if they've lied about that, and now the evidence of conspiracy is coming out, and even Jack Anderson admits that there's evidence of conspiracies coming out, why do we accept the same people telling us that these are suicides or mob hits? Why do we have to believe them now? If they lied to us then, what makes you think they're not lying to us now? Why do you think we have to believe them? 13 years later, they'll say, oh, we found out the CIA killed Roselli because he was testifying. Or we found out the CIA killed Nicoletti, or they killed George de Morenchild, or a CIA witness was seen outside de Morenchild's house. We're getting the same lies that we got years ago. Nothing has changed with the major media. If they give a little information, they cover up the new lies. They'll tell you right now that, yes, Lee Harvey Oswald met with anti-Castro Cubans and call that news and get paid for that 13 years later. And then they write another column saying the mob hit these people, and we have no evidence. Furthermore, besides doing extensive research on each of those names, or as much as I can on any of them, I did tell you that a gentleman I'll give him a code name, Thomas, had called me several months ago and told me that he worked for the CIA and that he had killed William Harvey of the CIA and that it was not a heart attack he had. And he named the chemical that was given to him, and there's no trace of it after he dies. And the only reason he told me was that when he wanted to quit working for the agency, there was a contract on his life. And he told me, I've shared this with you before, that his next job was to kill a particular congresswoman. Well, these murders are escalating now. It's perfectly obvious because on March the 30th, 1977, the House of Representatives voted for a two-year investigation into the murder of John Kennedy and Reverend Martin Luther King. And within an hour or so after that happened, or 2 days after, three important murders took place. Why are the murders happening now? It isn't hard to figure out. For one thing, if these people are silenced, of course we won't get all the pieces put together. That's the one thing. If George de Morenchild dies, Jack Ruby dies, Lee Harvey Oswald dies, it doesn't matter what evidence is around. They are silenced, so we're deprived of that. The second point is that after these witnesses are singled out and killed, then the testimony is altered. We can say what they were thinking or what they would have said or what they would have written, and we can put the blame on the lower level instead of the people that run the government today. In the third place, they can blame dead patsies. Not that they weren't involved, but we have a lot of whipping boys now. We have J. Edgar Hoover, H.L. Hunt, Alan Dulles, Lyndon Johnson, and they can take the blame if necessary. That's why when George de Morenchild is murdered, you can put the blame on the oil people in Texas, H.L. Hunt. Not that Hunt didn't have a role. He did have a role in the assassination. But I've done this work for 13 years, and his role was not with George de Morenchild. His role was with Jack Ruby. And Rockefeller's role was with George de Morenchild. The Eastern Council of Foreign Relations, that gang of criminals that run the White House and run Jimmy Carter and run Cyrus Vance and Mr. Brzezinski and the whole gang. The Eastern Seaboard had more to do with George de Morenchild, and by killing him, they can put the blame on an oil person in Texas who was not important. De Morenchild's contacts went high up. So by killing him and using his testimony, they can blame these other people that are dead. Another important thing is that when witnesses are called now, they won't say as much. If you saw The Godfather and you saw the dead horse in the bed, you know how much he would talk after that, or that's a lesson. And a mafia way of telling people not to talk, and the CIA and the mafia are one, is to shoot in the mouth, and it's a symbol, don't talk. And so that de Morenchild being shot through the mouth is telling these people, don't talk, and therefore they get the lesson. You know, two important witnesses such as Ms. Sato Trafficante and Laverne Forsyth and also James Earl Ray were testifying or supposed to talk in court. James Earl Ray said on national television, I feel like Valachi, the mafia man, who was told he'd get protection. He talked when he was in jail, and then they took him out of his protection. He was killed. Laverne Forsyth was to talk about the Howard Hughes will that he allegedly took to Melvin Dummar, and he took the 50th, he took the Fifth Amendment 50 times, walked out of court, went to Anchorage, Alaska, and said, I'm not talking. And Sato Trafficante went before the House Select Committee on Assassinations, and he just refused to answer any questions. They knew in advance he wouldn't. And why should he? With all of those deaths, if you look at this long list of their friends, who would talk? And why would you talk? The government isn't protecting them. The government wants them dead to protect their own trails. Because the people behind this, a lot of them are still alive. Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford particularly, who know a lot and covered it up. And Mr. Richard Helms and James McCord, and a whole lot of people know what happened when John Kennedy was killed and were part of the cover-up. When Jim Garrison arrested Clay Shaw, as I said, New Orleans, David Ferry was dead the next day. If de Morenchild worked with that gang, would you talk? After de Morenchild was killed, it's a lesson. When Dorothy Hunt was killed, the Watergate people shut up. They're not going to tell you much. Well, Carlos Prio Siqueiros and George de Morenchild had many things in common. In addition to being killed in the same state in Florida, a day apart with gunshot wounds. Siqueira was president of Cuba, as I said, before Batista took over, and both men were linked to the Bay of Pigs operation. Siqueira worked with the anti-Castro Cuban community. He used some of that $30 to $50 million he took out for helping organize people against Fidel Castro. But most of his life living in this country when he left Cuba was finding ways to get even with Fidel Castro through planned demonstrations, invasion plans, cutting off trade of the United States with Castro. De Morenschild worked with Warren Smith. He formed the Venezuelan Oil Trust. They owned one half of Cuba's oil under lease when Castro confiscated the oil companies. Carlos Prio Siqueiros helped organize the Bay of Pigs operation. George de Morenschild worked with the American Embassy, who was in Guatemala the day they took off. He knew E. Howard Hunt and used the American Embassy for his mail and contacts and took photographs he took over the United States government. Both George de Morenschild and Carlos Prio Siqueiros' plans were shattered when Kennedy pulled back that air support for the invasion of the Bay of Pigs. Siqueiros' and de Morenschild's names were both linked to the Kennedy assassination. President Jimmy Carter sent an emissary to see Fidel Castro it was in February last month, February 77, and the same day they were talking to Fidel Castro, Carlos Prio Siqueiros was meeting with Secretary of State Cyrus Vance in the United States. Siqueiros had important contacts with President Nixon, the Republican Party. He arranged demonstrations in Miami for the 1972 convention with Bernard Barker and Frank Sturgis and the Watergate team. And de Morenschild also had important contacts, as I mentioned before, when he traveled in Mexico. He carried letters from Nelson Rockefeller. He carried credit from Chase National Bank for $1,250 while he traveled with his uncle, the Nazi, who was written up by Farrago as being a hardcore member of the German Nazi Party. De Morenschild's contacts with Lee Harvey Oswald were to introduce him to the agents of the military intelligence area and the oil engineers in the Southwest. Carlos Prio Siqueiros' role in the assassination was closely associated with Jack Ruby, the man who would kill Lee Harvey Oswald 2 days after Kennedy was assassinated. Jack Ruby had gambling interests. He owned part of a place called the Colonial Inn, a gambling club in Hollandale, Florida. In the 1950s, he was arranging, along with Siqueiros, to take weapons and arms to Fidel Castro. They were hoping to overthrow Batista, help Castro, and they'd have their gambling, prostitution, drug market going again on the island. And both of the men, Jack Ruby and Siqueiros, thought that if they worked together, they would achieve their goal and regain the goodies of Cuba. And they were rejected by Fidel Castro, and they were angry. And de Morenschild lost his oil leases when Fidel Castro confiscated them. Ruby left Miami at one time and purchased a share of a Havana gambling house owned by Carlos Prio Siqueiros. So they were business partners. Jack Ruby lost his gambling profit when Castro became an overt communist. Carlos Prio Siqueiros lost his chance to reap another $50 million off the Cuban slavery when Castro became a communist. De Morenschild was a two-time loser. His father lost control of the wealthy Nobel oil fields for the Tsar when they were kicked out of Russia by the communists, and then his leases for oil were confiscated by communist Castro, so he was burned two times. And Charles Nicoletti of the CIA, who imported prostitutes, that was part of his job for the CIA, importing prostitutes to Las Vegas and around the country, was a loser. He didn't get to kill Fidel Castro, but he was hired by the CIA to do the job, and he failed along with some of the others. Siqueiros had a role in the Kennedy assassination. He was in on the planning part of it with the Free Cuba Committee. He headed a five-pronged army against John Kennedy, and they also were responsible for the Martin Luther King assassination and the Robert Kennedy assassination. And one of the roles Siqueiros had was misinformation of Lee Harvey Oswald as soon as his friend and co-nightclub owner, Jack Ruby, killed Lee Harvey Oswald, the Patsy. Carlos Prio Siqueiros pumped misinformation about the case. November the 20th, he had a friend, Salvador D. Virgin, who went to Mexico on the orders of Carlos Prio. This is 2 days before Kennedy was killed. And as soon as Kennedy was dead, Virgin stated that Oswald had been to the Cuban embassy. He was the one who told the stories that Oswald was a sympathizer of Castro and wanted to get into Cuba. Who was Salvador D. Virgin? He had been with Carlos Prio Siqueiros in Cuba. He was the chief of military intelligence during the regime of Prio from 1948 to 1952. And he used this chief of intelligence to go to Mexico to let out the story that Lee Harvey Oswald was a communist 2 days after he arrived in Mexico. And these men were both working for the United States Defense Industrial Security Command. and they were providing misinformation. That's how Frank Sturgis, Frank Fiorini of Watergate fame, was giving introductions of Lee Harvey Oswald, the communist, in Florida as soon as Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested, because Carlos Prieto-Siqueiros worked for the Department of Misinformation. He just had enough agents giving the story that Lee Harvey Oswald was a communist and a Cuban sympathizer. And then his agent and co-partner from the clubs, Jack Ruby, killed Lee Harvey Oswald. And so it looked like Jack Rubenstein, the Jew, killed Lee Harvey Oswald, the communist, and took all the blame away from the United States military defense industry. There's a gentleman named Robert Ray McEwen, who is an associate of Jack Ruby. He knew Fidel Castro personally, and Fidel Castro visited him in Houston, Texas, and wanted to give him a position in his government before he took over and made Cuba totally communist. And McEwen had a partnership and a drive-in also with Carlos Prieto-Siqueiros. And as soon as Castro took over, several of McEwen's friends were in jail, and Jack Ruby called McEwen and needed help to get these people released by Castro. Carlos Prieto-Siqueiros' name came up at the time of Watergate. John Ehrlichman was going to use him as a defense witness. Siqueiros and Nixon have been friends for many, many years, going back to the early Florida Mafia days. The stories Jeff Gerth did on Nixon the Mafia mentioned Carlos Prieto-Siqueiros. He's interwoven with the Solidaritas, who were the White Russians, George de Morenschild's group, and from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, a gentleman, John Demonil, a Russian exile, who worked with Carlos Prieto-Siqueiros and George de Morenschild. The interweaving of these people from the time of the Bay of Pigs operation up through the Kennedy assassination into Watergate was very thick. And yet when Carlos Prieto-Siqueiros died last week, I doubt if any of you who didn't know me or hadn't remembered me mentioning his name in an article would have even linked him to George de Morenschild, who died the day before, or Mr. Nicoletti up in Chicago, who died gunned down the same way that Sam Giancana was killed. Siqueiros' name came out through a lot of Watergate information. In 1974, Siqueiros warned the State Department that the Cuban exile community would be waging a war against Castro in violence and terrorism, and they intend to carry it out, which they could do with immunity, knowing that no CIA agent is ever prosecuted or has been prosecuted. In February 75, Siqueiros was charged by a leading Venezuelan newspaper as having carried out acts of terrorism to overthrow the governor Carlos Perez in Venezuela. And Cuban exiles bombed the Panamanian embassy in Caracas, the Venezuelan consulate in New York, and the Cuba-Venezuela Friendship Institute. Well, Carlos is a heavy dude, as was de Morenschild. They had many interweaving lives together, and I do want to do some more of it in the weeks to come. I did want to share it with you because the news passed over this man as if he didn't belong to the same group as de Morenschild, and he did, and they died just a day apart in Florida, and they were murders, and they were not suicide. I'll be with you next week on Dialogue Conspiracy. This is Mae Brussel from Carmel, California. Take care and read those papers, and let's hope that more witnesses are allowed to live and are not killed in the next few weeks at least.